Good evening from Washington, D.C., and welcome to a special two-hour program focused entirely on the impeachment trial of President Donald J. Trump, which officially begins tomorrow afternoon. Now, whatever you think the outcome will be, it cannot be understated how historic this moment is. It is one that will be taught in history books, mentioned at the top of any presidential biography, and remembered by those who took part and all who witnessed. This is the third time a president has been impeached in the almost 250-year history of our country. It's also potentially the first time an impeached president, if acquitted, must then run for re-election, which makes findings of a new CNN poll all the more important. It shows 51% of Americans believe the Senate should vote to remove President Trump from office. 45% disagree. We're going to have a full breakdown of those numbers later on. Right now, we were focused on the moving pieces of this impeachment trial. We know the arguments the president and the House Democratic impeachment managers will make. In a statement today, the White House reiterated its previous arguments, calling the two articles of impeachment, quote, flimsy. 17 times they used the word unconstitutional. What we did not know until this moment is how Republicans intend to actually structure the trial, the rules, not just whether witnesses could be called, but how long both sides will have to make their arguments. A short time ago, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell provided some much needed clarity literally hours before the trial was to begin. Joining me now from Capitol Hill, senior congressional correspondent Manu Raju. So what have we learned about the resolution from McConnell?
Well, what McConnell is doing is essentially setting up a fast track that could lead to the president's acquittal potentially as soon as next week if the Republicans don't break ranks, join Democrats, vote for witnesses, or if there's no bipartisan agreement to get witnesses, then we could see this happening pretty quickly. And this is why. Because under the resolution, after the tomorrow is going to be focused exclusively on the debate or the resolution, Democrats will offer amendments to that resolution. Once the resolution is adopted that lays out the parameters of the proceedings, then each side will have 24 hours to make their case. First, the Democrats will, then the Republicans will. But those 24 hours can only be used in 2 days. So that means Democrats will have probably on Thursday or Wednesday and Thursday of this week to make their case. The White House will then, the president's team will have Friday and probably Saturday to make their case. It's possible the White House may not use, the president's team may not use all 24 hours to defend him. And at that point, there'll be 16 hours of questions that senators would have to ask questions to each side. Now, once those questions are done, possible, but the early of next week, then they would move into the question about whether to subpoena any witnesses. And if that question is voted down, then there'll be a separate vote, which is much different than the Clinton vote, that would vote about whether to actually admit the House Democrats in evidence that they gathered during the impeachment inquiry into the record. That in the Clinton case, that was admitted automatically. But here, under the rules, the Senate would actually have to vote, a majority vote, to admit that into the record. Now, once those votes are all done, and as I said, if Democrats and Republicans don't both agree to subpoena witnesses and subpoena documents, then they could set up that acquittal vote. And it's very possible that that could be by the middle of the week, by next week, and the president could be on his way well ahead of his State of the Union in delivering that address after the Senate proceedings could be finished, Anderson.
So the State of the Union, what is two Tuesdays from now, correct?
Yeah, February 4th is the day, and that's the day the president wants to be acquitted by.
So the 24 hours that each side has, who determines how they use that 24 hours?
Well, when that's given to the Democrats, first go to the Democrats. Adam Schiff, the lead impeachment manager, will be arguing for a good chunk of that, but they will split it up accordingly among their impeachment managers on their team. The House Democrats will on those 24 hours. So they will split it up how they see fit, and then the president's team will decide how they see fit on how to make the arguments over 24-hour time span. But that will be, it could be from the early afternoon to late at night, because they're only given two session days to make their case. And we'll see if they use all 24 hours or decide to move it even quicker, Anderson.
And Manu, these rules are very different than the Clinton impeachment rules, correct?
Yeah, the biggest difference is the one that I alluded to earlier, was that the actual requiring evidence to be submitted, we require a vote to actually allow that evidence to be submitted. So the Democrats have got the information all throughout this impeachment inquiry in the House, but they may not be able to admit that if 51 senators don't vote and allow that to go forward. Now, Republicans are arguing because they say that the Democratic process, in their view, was a sham process that did not give due process to the president. So they're saying that's why it's different than Clinton, and also different than Clinton, that Clinton allowed for 4 days of opening arguments on both sides over 24 hours. So about six hours a day instead of what we're expected up to 12 hours a day. So that is also different than Clinton. That's what got Democrats riled up tonight, Anderson, because they're saying Mitch McConnell promises will be a lot, which would mirror Clinton's trial, but it's different in some key ways. But McConnell's office is saying very clearly they never said it'd be exactly the same. It's going to be similar. And in their view, it's still very similar, Anderson.
All right, Manoraj Amano, thanks. Here with our political and legal team, Carl Bernstein, Jeffrey Toobin, Gloria Borger, Kirsten Powers, and former Senator Rick Santorum. Jeff, let's start with you. Just in terms of the legality, the opening salvo by McConnell, what do you think of it?
Mitch McConnell's trying to make the trial a farce. I mean, trying to make it a joke. I mean, this is, you know, the trial will start every day at 1 in the afternoon. 12 hours would be 1 in the morning. But that's not how the Senate works. There will be breaks. So the idea is that McConnell wants to try to keep most of the evidence in the wee hours so that nobody sees it. And then the real new atrocity, frankly, that McConnell added today, which I don't think many people saw coming, was the idea that the House managers couldn't even present their evidence without a vote from the full Senate, something that's completely new, that was not true in the Clinton trial. And it's all just designed to engineer an acquittal as soon as possible.
Before the statement.
What I don't understand, though, is if the evidence is has to be voted on at the end, is that correct?
Like yes.
After.
So while the House managers are making their arguments, can they not use evidence from the House?
We don't know yet.
I think it's... The answer can't be no, but just as an official matter, it is not received into evidence until okay. later.
Look, the evidence is out there. I mean, it's not
right.
like it's not known. It's not nobody's hiding anything. They can certainly refer to what happened in the House.
Then why this vote?
Yeah.
Again,
there's a lot more evidence to be known.
The government accountability.
That's what part of this is about.
That what the president did was illegal.
Yeah, that's.
They've referred to it in their documents.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that the GAO said that Obama did was illegal, and nobody said anything about it.
Well,
so the reality is the GAO represents the Congress. They have a different point of view than the executive branch,
right.
And there's always contested.
But I want to agree with Jeffrey on this. I think this is a perversion of the process that was used with Bill Clinton. Plain and simple. It's condensed to the point where it's laughable. It's a joke. I mean, you want people to sit there for 12 hours a day and listen to this rather than splitting it up, as was with Clinton, to 6 or so hours a day just because the president of the United States would like to have this done conveniently by the State of the Union.
And so do you think there might have been some motive that Nancy Pelosi held this for a month to be proximate to the State of the Union?
Nancy Pelosi was actually trying to find out what the rules were going to be. And by the way, Mitch McConnell was going to keep them in his back pocket until the final day anyway.
She had no leverage.
Even if she turned over the articles earlier, they couldn't have started the trial before now.
Right.
Let's try a bigger view.
They were on their Christmas vacation.
Look, they would have started it a lot earlier and this could have been done in a more orderly fashion. Nancy Pelosi forced a shortened process.
No.
Carl?
We're already down in the weeds. Let's look at the big picture, which is this is the most important moment for the Republican Party since the censure of Joe McCarthy and the impeachment and resignation of Richard Nixon, in which Republicans became great heroes and patriots. Now we're looking at Midnight Mitch and the so-called world's greatest deliberative body really embracing a cover-up that is there for all to see. That's what this is about. It's about preventing information from becoming known and seen by the American public. Other impeachments, including Andrew Johnson, including Clinton, there has been no problem about knowing the truth of the facts. We still have a factual problem here because the president and those who work for him and Mitch McConnell have impeded the facts from the beginning.
That is just, there are facts that could be known. I agree. There's not all the facts that are not known. Whose responsibility is that? It is up to the House of Representatives to present the case.
Who wouldn't let the documents or witnesses come before the House?
Because there is a way to deal with that problem. You go to the courts and you work through the courts to get that information. They chose not to do that, and as a result of that, they don't have, you're right, they have a very...
How about being a president who doesn't cover up and lie all the time and says, all right, we'll give you the evidence.
Kirsten?
There's another way to do it that you don't go to the courts and you do what other presidents have done, where you just actually tell people to go and testify. So the way you act like the only way to get people to testify and give you the relevant information is to go to the courts is just disproven by history.
That's right.
The other question I have is, so does it have to start at 1 o'clock? Is that
Yes.
So that's the other thing. So to your point of this is Nancy Pelosi's fault, nobody's making this start at 1 o'clock. It could start in the morning.
Well, no, and John Roberts.
John Roberts. Okay.
So maybe he could change his schedule.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the way the Clinton impeachment went. We started at 1 o'clock.
Yes, that's true.
But why 2 days? Tell me, Rick.
Because they want to get it in before the State of the Union. I'm sure. If they aren't, they're crazy. They need to get it in before the State of the Union.
How about being part of a cover-up?
Didn't Bill Clinton have a State of the Union?
Gave a speech at the State of the Union in the middle of the trial. I remember it there. I mean,
His poll numbers actually go up?
Absolutely.
Well, and the fascinating thing, and again, history will tell us who was right. I mean, Bill Clinton did not acknowledge the impeachment process. He said over and over again, I'm going to go back to work for the American people. He didn't interfere. He didn't complain. And all this president does is talk about it's a witch hunt. It's a farce. You know, we'll know next November who was right.
I'm going to agree with you on this. I think that Bill Clinton handled it. I was there. Bill Clinton handled it with aplomb. I mean, he was contrite. Did focus on not talking about this issue. He didn't want to talk about it for a lot of reasons, obviously. But he focused on doing the work of the American public. I think Republicans know that the president will not do that. And if the president is engaged in that in a trial during the State of the Union, it may not be a very pretty show.
But that doesn't. That's a
look. Republicans have every right to
protect the president.
Protect the president, just like the Democrats have every right to try to drag the president through.
So, is this the right thing to do, or are they protecting the president?
I think it is the right thing to do. There is no question as to how this is going to turn out, and so the reason to hold this and delay this doesn't make a lot of sense.
All right, we got to take a break. We're just getting started. We're on for 2 hours tonight. There's a lot to cover. We have breaking news from the Washington Post reporting about the latest Republican plans surrounding former National Security Advisor John Bolton. If witnesses are in fact called before the Senate, if Bolton is called and agrees to go. Later, the new CNN polling on the eve of President Trump's impeachment trial, what Americans say the Senate should do. There's more breaking news tonight. The Washington Post reports that even if the Senate votes to allow witness testimony in the Senate impeachment trial, Republicans are quietly working out plans to keep former National Security Advisor John Bolton from testifying publicly. Sharing the byline on the story is Washington Post reporter and CNN political analyst Rachel Bade. She joins us now by phone. So, Rachel, the president's attorneys and his allies in the Senate, how would they try to stop Bolton from testifying publicly if enough Republicans did agree to have witnesses come forward and Bolton agreed to come forward?
Good evening, Anderson. Yes, so we are hearing that they're trying to put together this sort of contingency plan if they lose this battle over witnesses and whether or not to call them. There's sort of two options that they're looking at. The first one, the president has sort of floated this notion that he could claim executive privilege over Bolton's testimony to keep him from saying anything. We are hearing from Republicans that the White House has also talked about if Bolton were to not listen to the White House asserting executive privilege, they could go to a court and appeal for some sort of injunction that would stop him from testifying until they sort of could litigate what could or could not be said under executive privilege. Now, that could take months, and we're sort of seeing that happen right now on another investigation that the Democrats are doing. But there's this other option that we just heard about today from our Republican sources on both sides of Pennsylvania Avenue, and that is this notion that they could go into a classified briefing. Basically, that would mean that anything Bolton says would be hidden. But I think it's pretty clear that what Republicans are trying to do is they're trying to make sure that if Bolton comes to the Senate, anything he says will not be put out in the spotlight and will be hidden.
Is it even clear, I mean, from the sources you're talking to, do they have a sense of where Bolton is in terms of how critical he is of events? I mean, we know through the testimony of two people that he had, called it a drug deal, but we don't really know where his head is at or what he's willing to say.
Yeah, I think he's really a wild card. I mean, we've heard speculation on both sides, both Democrats and Republicans. People don't know if he's going to be helpful to the Democrats' case. Is he going to be helpful to the Republicans' case? I have talked to Republicans who sort of float this notion that a guy who is a lifelong Republican has served in GOP administrations and is a former Fox News, you know, TV star. Is he going to really turn on the president and sort of offer something that will make him be more likely to be removed from office? There are Republicans who think he wouldn't do that because he would be ousted and wouldn't be able to get a job in sort of GOP lines of work. But, you know, you see the evidence that these witnesses who've testified in the House brought forward, and that is his underlings saying that he told them point blank that what he was seeing on Ukraine was a, quote, drug deal. And he told them to raise the issue to top White House lawyers. He clearly thought there was some legal problems here. And so I think Republicans, they're just not willing to sort of play a game here in terms of seeing what he's going to say. They'd rather just block it, even though they don't know exactly what he would testify to.
Rachel Bade, I appreciate it. Washington Post, the story's there now. Thanks so much. Back with our legal and political team. Is it ethical, Jeff, for a majority party to be coordinating with the White House how to deal with potential witness testimony?
You know, when the framers set up the impeachment process, they knew that the senators would be politicians. They could have said, you know, this would go to a jury like any other jury. So I don't have a problem with the president talking to the senators of his party. I mean, that's just realism. The problem is that they are setting up a process that is a farce. Oh. They are setting up a process that is designed not to disclose any information. That's the problem. I don't care if they talk to each other. I think it's realistic when you have a Senate jury that they, you know, that there will be a certain degree of coordination. The problem is the result they've come up with, which, you know, this Bolton idea is just further proof that they don't want the public to learn anything more than it already knows.
Rick, do you think the White House, Rick, is afraid of Bolton?
I suspect that they don't want any wild cards, of course. I mean, that's any White House would not want someone who they don't know their testimony to be testifying at a Senate trial. That's why this should have been done by the House. And so
but
you
it
can,
couldn't be done by the
it
House.
It could have been done by the House if they took the time to do it.
But wait
they
a minute.
Didn't
but wait
take
a minute. What
the
if the president what if the president had said, as Ronald Reagan said during Iran-Contra, what if the president had said, I have nothing to hide. I want everybody to testify and to tell the truth. Ronald Reagan could have been in a heap of trouble during Iran-Contra, and he did exactly the opposite. And what they're doing now is trying to hide Bolton in a classified setting, trying to hide him from the American public because they're afraid of what he's going to say.
Again, that if you are the one being accused, remember, this was started by House Democrats. They have the burden of proof. They have not met the burden of proof. And so you can say, well, they're trying to
block.
They're doing the role of someone who's being aggressively attacked by one party in the House, and they are defending themselves and doing it in a way you may say, I don't like the way they defend themselves. It is not their responsibility to prove the president's innocent.
Bolton has said,
it's their responsibility to respond to the House.
Bolton didn't want to testify before the House. He thought it was a circus, right? He said, I'm willing to testify, or his attorney said, I am willing to testify before the Senate if you subpoena me. He has said he's willing to do it. He didn't say in a classified setting. He didn't talk about privilege. He said, I'm willing to tell my story. They're afraid of the story because we know a lot of the story, right? We know that he said it was a drug
deal.
Isn't
it just common sense that if you're innocent and there are people who are working for you and know that you're innocent, he's maintaining his innocence. And the people who actually have firsthand information about that, wouldn't you want them to testify? And the only reason you wouldn't want them to testify is because they're not going to back up your story that you're innocent. I mean, this is just common sense.
Again, that's you can certainly make that conclusion. I think that's a rational conclusion to make, but I think you can also make the conclusion that the White House counsels have, which is they have privileged information and they're going to protect, White House has a responsibility to protect that privilege. And they're going to do that. And I think that's another legitimate and rational way of looking at
the story.
But
that's why they wanted the witnesses in the McConnell statement, the rules, that's why they said the witnesses have to be deposed first. So if they deposed the witnesses first, one would presume there wouldn't be any surprises. And then they would decide, perhaps as they decided during the Clinton trial, to show on video what they mutually agreed they could show to the American public. So it wouldn't perhaps get in the privilege wouldn't be an issue or classified information or classified information wouldn't be
an
issue.
But she's saying you could negotiate that
if what you wanted was the truth.
Again, I would just say one other thing. Careful what you wish for, because if we go beyond the record, which came from the House, and bring in extraneous witnesses related, then what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
That's true.
And you're going to see Joe Biden. You're going to see Hunter Biden. Who knows who else you're going to see? It will be. You want to talk about a free for all mess? That's what you're looking at.
All right. More to discuss. We're going to take another quick break. Coming up next, new CNN polling on the eve of the president's impeachment trial. What Americans think the Senate should do when we continue. So our breaking news tonight, we have the Republican resolution outlining their rules for the Senate impeachment trial, which were just released. Among the proposals, House managers and the president's legal team each getting 24 hours to make their opening arguments. That can mean long 12-hour days, each going late into the night when most Americans may not be watching television. It's the same time frame as President Clinton's impeachment trial, but on a more condensed schedule, 2 days as opposed to four. Democrats are pushing back, alleging that key facts will be delivered in late hours simply because Republicans don't want the American people to actually hear those facts. Could be a reason for that. A new CNN poll, as we showed you at the top of the broadcast, suggests 51% of Americans believe that President Trump should be removed from office. 45% disagree. Our political director, David Chalian, joins us now with more on the polling. So more than half the country want to see the president removed from office.
Yeah, and that's about where it was back in October, November. It seems sort of when the facts are central to the conversation, you see not towards the president's favor. When it's about process, it tends to move a little bit towards his favor. But look at some of the demographic trends we see underneath that number, Anderson. Mm-hmm. Take a look at the gender gap. I mean, I think this is astonishing. 59% of women say convict and remove compared to 42% of men. Take a look at the racial breakdown. You'll see 86% of African Americans say convict and remove, 65% of Hispanics, 42% of white Americans in this poll. And then the age divide also, younger voters under 45, 56% of them say convict and remove. If you're over 45, 47% of those say convict and remove.
And whether or not the Senate trial should include witnesses, people have opinions on that.
Yeah, I think this is probably the most significant number in this poll. 69% of Americans in this poll say there should be witnesses that were not part of the House process included in this Senate trial. And take a look at it by party. 48% of Republicans, see that number there, bottom left column there. 48% of Republicans say there should be witnesses. 44% of Republicans say there shouldn't be. That is the number that Chuck Schumer hopes to use as some political leverage to find those four Republicans to come to his side.
And what about the numbers of people believing the president abused his powers?
Yeah, more people than say convict and remove. I mean, 58% say that he did indeed violate the abuse of power. 57% say he did indeed obstruct Congress. This means that you're talking about people who don't think he should be convicted and removed from office, who do actually think he's guilty of doing what he's alleged to have done.
David Chalian, stay with us. I want to bring in our team. Kirsten, it's interesting because that sort of aligns with the argument that some Republicans could take, which is, well, don't like what he did. It was inappropriate, but it's not an impeachable offense.
Well, I mean, I think that was the thing that jumped out to me. The last thing that you said was the fact that so many people actually believe that the things are actually in the impeachment articles happened, but they don't believe that he should be impeached is troubling to me. And the people can have opinions on it, but I think if they had more information, they would understand that these actually are impeachable offenses. And I would like to hear from them why they don't think that they
well,
are.
Well, I mean, as you know, Alan Dershowitz is arguing that very thing, which is that whatever you may think of these are not impeachable. Lawrence Tribe and others disagree
with
this.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that disagree with that, and I think that that's what this is for. That's what the impeachment trial is for people to present their case. And I think we're going to hear a very airtight case that this is exactly the type of behavior that the founders envisioned when they came up with the idea of impeachment.
Gloria, it is remarkable, though, that if 51% of the country, according to this poll, want to see the president removed, mm-hmm. that's way more than I think Clinton had like 30%.
Right. Yeah. Clinton was much more popular. Yeah. Also, don't forget, Clinton was a popular president. Donald Trump's popularity rating is, David, you know this better than I do.
Well, his approval rating today is at 43%.
43%. Clinton was much higher than that. But if you look at these numbers on the two articles of impeachment, which are abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, The public is there. The public says, we believe this. Now, the difficulty for Republicans is that while they might want to say, well, you know, this wasn't the right thing for him to do, inappropriate, but not impeachable, the president himself will not allow them to say this was inappropriate. His lawyers are saying it was perfectly appropriate. He is saying it was perfect. So if they stray from that argument, they risk his wrath. With Bill Clinton, Bill Clinton encouraged them to go on the floor and dump on him and say this was awful, this was terrible, but don't impeach him over an impropriety, or et cetera, et cetera. This president will not allow them to do that, and that is the political problem that they really face in this impeachment.
Carl, you know, Jeff Toobin, you also have been very critical of these new rules that were released by McConnell. Do you think people who are watching or who may tune in occasionally on this really care? Or that, I mean, it seems like these kind of tactics work.
I don't know. Look, everything that Trump has done has worked in terms that he wants them to work in terms of holding his base. But Mitch McConnell, what these numbers mean are something Mitch McConnell understands, that his party on the Hill does not like this president of the United States. Many of them, I'll ask Rick Santorum, 30%, 40%, 50% of the Republicans in the Senate despise Donald Trump, think that he is corrupt and unfit to hold office.
You think that's really true?
Yes, because I think, it's time the press really, that we really start talking to the principal legislative assistants, to the senators, to find out what their bosses really think. Because certainly,
Who cares what they really think? Well, let's have what they vote.
Well, that's right. I mean, and McConnell knows there are four or five that are wavering on some of these procedural questions. And if one of them, particularly Susan Collins, who reveres Margaret Chase Smith, who took on Joe McCarthy, were to get up.
You'll get Toobin started on that.
Exactly. Oh, no, God. But she's, I mean, she's craven.
Get Toobin started on Collins.
She's craven. She's craven and has been cowardly and... All right. And we have no reason to think
get a break in. We'll let Jeff stew on Susan Collins for a moment when we come back. More new polling numbers. Look at how many Republicans want witnesses at the trial. More on that ahead. We're now in the new CNN polling on the eve of President Trump's impeachment trial. Again, 51% of Americans saying the Senate should vote to convict and remove President Trump from office. The number not wavering much over the last several months. You see it from September until now, back with our team. You also, David Chalian, the number of women who want to see the president.
59%. Yeah. I mean, we see a gender gap in almost every bit of polling around President Trump that is pretty significant. And by the way, if he loses re-election, it will be because of women voters across the country. But look at that. 59% want him removed, convicted and removed. 42% of men say that. So you just see that's a 17-point gender gap. And we see this time and again in every aspect around President Trump's political standing.
Rick, as somebody who would like to see the president reelected, what do you do about that problem?
Well, I mean, that's a foundational problem that goes way beyond impeachment. And, you know, they are trying, I think desperately trying to do some things to address that gender gap. I mean, if you look at the Defense Authorization Act, they put in paid family leave, which a parental leave, which, again, very much appealing to suburban voters on that regard. He's pushing for a broader paid parental leave program. There's a limited amount the president can do on a policy point of view. Most of it has to do with tone and style. And that's been problematic for him.
You mean there's a limited amount he could do because he doesn't want to do it?
There's a limited amount of you because you're with the Congress.
Turn out more men in Pennsylvania in the election is
well,
the strategy.
With the Congress, it's not cooperating.
His fundamental argument also doesn't resonate with women as much. I mean, he is completely based on grievance that you are being, things are being taken away from you. The country is being overrun by people and taking away your privilege, basically. And I don't think women generally feel like that is their position in society.
If there's any party that's based on grievance, it's the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party.
White men are his base, and it's because they're convinced that all the brown people are coming to take everything away from them and ruin the country.
I think that's an error, number one. And if there's any party that is a party that's just listen to the Democratic debate last week. If you want to hear grievance. It's one grievance.
All Trump does is complain about, A, how everybody's persecuting him and then how everyone is persecuting
him. I will agree that it's based on grievance of personal persecution. But
and,
as
also,
far as broader,
and also
no,
grievance of his voters, of the fact that, you know, that the liberals are anti-Christian and persecuting Christians. And it's based on this idea
that there's religious persecution going on
in this country.
In this country, there's religious persecution. Absolutely.
What would you count?
Go on a college campus and see if
there is. That is not persecution. Persecution, like what happens in the Middle East, perhaps, when you actually get murdered.
It's degrees of persecution, but there's certainly
people not agreeing with you is
of religious freedom.
This is nothing to do with what we're talking about.
It's not nearly as bad, I would agree with you, as it is around the world.
Religious persecution.
But it's a serious issue.
What William Barr thinks is religious persecution is having bakery owners and innkeepers and restaurant owners
serving gay people,
being
little sisters of the poor,
being allowed to discriminate against gay people.
Catholic
that's what
charities.
Religious freedom is.
All of those things are
that's exactly
in fact,
right.
Religious
Rick, this is what you want. You want gay people barred from stores, from restaurants.
That's ridiculous.
Absurd. It's not absurd.
It is absolutely absurd.
The administration is in court asking for
They're not things. Asking for that at all. No one's barring anybody from anything. Of course, that is. Jeffrey, you know that's
I
not
know
true.
It. There are lawsuits
the,
about
the
this.
Reality is it's about participating in ceremonies that they religiously object to. It has nothing to do with selling a bagel to somebody.
Baking a cake is not participating
in a ceremony. In fact, the position has been taken on bagels, that indeed people who own these places have a right, if their religious beliefs prohibit it, not to give a bagel with a cream cheese to a gay person.
Then you know what? I would be on the other side of that suit because I think they have
an
obligation to do so. Yeah. But when it comes to other things, they don't.
All right. We've gotten in the weeds and the bagels and the cream.
So, that was my fault.
Let's take a locks and take a moment. Jeff's going to stick around. Up next, we're going to dissect the White House legal strategy. Joining us, Alan Dershowitz, who's working with the president's legal team. And as he will say, he's not on the legal team. He's defending the Constitution. We'll talk about it ahead. Earlier today, President Trump's legal team issued a trial memorandum responding to House articles of impeachment. Quote, after focus group testing various charges for weeks, House Democrats settled on two flimsy articles of impeachment that allege no crime or violation of law whatsoever, much less high crimes and misdemeanors as required by the Constitution, unquote. They also write, quote, the diluted standard asserted here would permanently weaken the presidency and forever alter the balance among the branches of government in a manner that offends the constitutional design established by the founders. Later, they write, quote, each article is impermissibly duplicitous. Each article presents a smorgasbord of multiple independent acts as possible basis for conviction. As a result, the articles invite the danger of an unconstitutional conviction if less than 2/3 of senators agree that any particular act was an abuse of power or obstruction. Back with me now here in Washington, CNN Chief Legal Analyst Jeffrey Toobin, and we're joined by one of President Trump's team of defenders, Harvard professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz, who, as he is pointing out, will be speaking on behalf of the president strictly on constitutional grounds. Professor Dershowitz is the author of The Case Against Removing Trump. Professor Dershowitz, so let me start. The argument put forward by the president's attorneys, arguments that you've made as well, that impeachment requires a crime. I want to play something you said back in 1998 for our viewers.
It certainly doesn't have to be a crime. If you have somebody who completely corrupts the office of president and who abuses trust and who poses great danger to our liberty, you don't need a technical crime. Mm-hmm.
So you also recently said without a crime, there can be no impeachment. Back then, you said that it certainly doesn't have to be a crime if you have somebody who completely corrupts the office of president, who abuses trust and who poses great danger to our liberty. You don't need a technical crime.
Well, that's true. You don't need a technical crime. That's my position today. I've said right from the beginning, you need criminal-like behavior akin to bribery and treason. Remember that in the Clinton case,
that's not what you said then.
There was That's what I said then. It's what I said now. You don't need a technical crime.
Criminal-like behavior. You said companies complete corrupts the office of president and abuses trust and poses great danger to
Earlier. Because so, the issue was not before anybody. In the Clinton case, he was charged with a crime. Now the issue is whether or not you need criminal type behavior. I've done a lot more research. Back then, I took the word of many academics who said that.
So you're
I've
wrong,
now
then.
Done the research. No, I wasn't wrong. What I have a more sophisticated basis for my argument now, having read Justice Curtis's opinion and other opinions. It's very clear now that what you need is criminal-like behavior akin to bribery and treason. What is very clear okay. is obstruction of justice, obstruction of Congress, or abuse of power aren't even close to what the framers had in mind. And I will show that during my speech by going through all of the debates in Congress,
okay.
Blackstone's commentaries. Yeah.
Okay. Jeff, go
what
ahead.
What is clear is that Allen was right in 1998 and he's wrong now. I mean, the two statements cannot be reconciled. I mean, one
yes,
is true right or one is wrong. And the one in 1998 was right. I mean, the idea,
no.
I mean, look, every single law professor that has looked at this issue except you seems
How
to think
professor?
That there
Do
is
you know
a
that, professor?
Let
you know Professor Bowie.
Let him complain.
Now, he just told
each other.
He just lied. Professor Bowie, who is a professor at Harvard, takes my view. Read his article, Jeffrey. Don't make up stories about every professor. Read Professor Bowie's article in the Harvard Law Review, where he quotes with approval Justice Curtis's argument. He's completely on my side. So please withdraw that argument that no professor has said it.
So you're saying that
Bowie doesn't exist. You did say everyone.
You said virtually every law professor. Okay, virtually
well, no,
everyone.
No, no. Okay, now you're saying you're wrong, okay? So now you're admitting you're wrong.
All right,
okay.
I'm admitting we that it's not
make,
every single
all,
law professor.
We
okay,
all right. improve
Alan.
And change our views when
right.
we focus
right.
more on the issue. And I focus more on the issue, and I am now completely convinced that the issue requires...
That yeah. Justice Curtis was not in a Supreme Court argument. He was making an argument to the Senate. And the
That's
point
right.
the point that you see, you know, I don't know what criminal-like behavior is. You keep talking
well,
about
I'll tell
that.
You what
the,
it
the
is.
Criminal, let me finish. Criminal, the idea that you can only impeach a president for criminal or criminal-like behavior is absurd on its face. Think about some examples. Suppose a president... goes to a religious commune and refuses to speak or talk to anyone. You think that president could be impeached? It's clearly legal, but of course would be impeached.
No, what he if couldn't you had a be. Let me explain why. Let me explain why. So when the framers sat down to discuss whether to have impeachment or not, one of the major issues was a president would become incapacitated. Madison talked about that. Gouverneur Morris talked about that. And that was a good reason for having impeachment. You don't want an incapacitated president. When it came time to articulate the criteria, they didn't include that because it isn't criminal and because it's open-ended and subject to abuse. So for 150 years, we didn't have a procedure for removing an incompetent president. It required the 25th Amendment to do that after Woodrow Wilson became incapacitated. So there's an enormous difference between what we think should be a ground for removal what the framers put in as a ground for removal. And so you're going to come up with a lot of hypotheticals, but the framers had to decide what's covered.
Professor, let's just not talk about a hypothetical. I want to go back. Previously, you said it doesn't have to be a crime if the person in office completely corrupts the office of president and who abuses trust and poses a great danger to our liberty, that is impeachable. Now you're saying criminal-like. So you're not so corrupting the office of the president, is that in your criminal light or criminal-like
behavior? No, it's not.
So
and
it's
that
not.
Was rejected.
So,
that was rejected by the framers.
So you were wrong. You're saying you were wrong back then.
I was saying that I'm much more correct right now, having done
much
all the research, because that's
that
the
mean?
Issue.
No.
Let me explain. Please don't shut me off. You have two against one here. Let me make my point.
No, I'm not on anyone's side. I'm trying to understand rationally what you're saying.
I did not. Well, listen. Maybe you'll understand if you listen. I didn't do research back then. I relied on what professor said. Because, please let me finish. Because that issue was not presented in the Clinton impeachment. Everybody knew that he was charged with a crime. The issue is whether it was a hard crime. Now the issue is whether a crime or criminal-like behavior is required. I've done all the research.
Okay, so you didn't do the research
22 years ago.
Got it.
I didn't do the research back then, okay, because that wasn't an issue.
So you're wrong.
I've done the research now. I wasn't wrong. I am just far more correct now than I was then. I said you didn't need a technical crime back then.
Okay,
I still don't think you need a technical crime. And I think your viewers are entitled to hear my argument without two bullies jumping on everything I say
and trying to
pinpoint and nitpick on what I said. Let's talk about what the issues are
instead of trying to attack
the messenger.
I don't think anybody's attacking
the messenger. I think, rationally, I'm not a lawyer, nor have I studied law, and I didn't go to Harvard, but I just, what you're saying, the words you are speaking do not jive with what you said in the past, and yet you're not saying what you said in the past is wrong. So
I didn't it was wrong. I'm saying what I'm saying now is right, and they're very similar when I talk about technical crimes. And you'll hear my argument laid out in far more detail, uninterrupted, when I speak on the Senate floor.
All right. Jeff Toobin, Professor Dershowitz, I appreciate it as always. Thank you. Stay with us. More ahead as the Senate prepares for only the third impeachment trial in U.S. history. We'll talk to a key Democratic senator, one of the jurors, about the state of play, and Professor Lawrence Tribe from Harvard joins us also.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.